Welcome to Listen by Jean Ginsberg. This audio experience and podcast is all about social media, digital marketing, entrepreneurship, and interviews with top entrepreneurs in the digital and social space. I'm your host, Jean Ginsberg, digital marketing expert, number one best-selling author, and award-winning entrepreneur. I will be sharing with you strategies, tips, and tactics on how to grow your business and your social media following. Thanks for listening. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. We have a very special guest today, Perun Chadha, that I met through YPO. Welcome to the episode. How's it going?
Going well. Thank you, Jinch. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. I know you were saying you had a busy day today, so we'll just jump right into our first question. I always like to ask my guests is just to set the stage. Just tell us a little bit about your background so that our audiences can kind of better understand how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. So you see, I'm wearing my Purdue colors today because, you know, why not? Because we're doing so well these days and enjoying some of this. But story starts in India, did my engineering there at Punjab Engineering College. And then I came to US, you know, mainly to do my MBA at Purdue. And the business that I'm running was a class project that I started there and started as a business plan competition submission. And I was stupid enough to continue progressing it and built two businesses. The first one was started in 2003. We sold that business some 3 years ago. We pivoted towards the second business, which I continue to run. This was started in 2012. So now 11th year. Running the board meeting management business. And, you know, started in Lafayette, Indiana, West Lafayette, moved from there to Chicago and lived there for a few years, 7-8 years. And then finally now coming to you from Newport Coast, California, which is
great. And maybe you could share a little bit about your professional background as well. So, as it relates to what you're doing now.
Yeah. So, you know, as an engineer, I got into technical sales, did technical sales for a couple of years. That was the start to my career at Wipro. Wipro is a global firm, you know, with a pretty, you know, big footprint at this point. Really fast growth years is what I saw. At Wipro, this was 99 and 2000, where everything tech was selling, the turn of the millennium, got a lot of business and a lot of companies to India at that time. So I got, you know, enamored by just the innovation and the fast pace of the tech world. So when I came for my MBA to Purdue, I followed my heart to really, you know, go down the entrepreneurial path, mainly because I was surrounded growing up with entrepreneurs. My dad was an entrepreneur as well, ran businesses. So I felt like it's so wide open and, you know, green field in terms of what you could do, it's worth a shot. So I met with my co-founder, Chris, at Purdue, and that's how we started this company. And professionally, I've always led the sales side of the house up until, you know, a few years later, where, you know, now, of course, there's a whole go-to-market team and leadership team with a CRO and a CMO leading the charge for us. But from being focused on the product innovation to really working the go-to-market engine in the early innings of the company, that is what brought about the most sort of, you know, satisfaction for me and, you know, a lot of results as well. So I've stayed an engineer, but just tinkering around the organization, if you will. And I've always fancied my chances at being able to find solutions to people who are looking for those solutions. Sometimes, you know, unbeknownst to them, they need that solution. I find myself actually always looking for, you know, where the solution fits. And, you know, so continued in that same vein for the last several years. So happy to share, you know, more along the way here.
Yeah, so for sure. I'd love to get into your organization. But you mentioned you started off as an engineer and now you're more on this, almost on the sales side. You know, what was that transition like? Because so it's sometimes really challenging to go from like being, you know, so kind of heads down in some sort of problem. I mean, it is obviously sales is always a problem too, but being more on the personal side of things.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been fascinated by how things are put together and I got to use a lot of that in just, you know, being an entrepreneur, working as, you know, trying to figure out the first version of the product, but really, you know, for my internships, for my, you know, post-engineering work, I'd done some enterprise sales. And, you know, enterprise sales for a technical product, so technical sales really, requires a lot of engineering know-how to really be able to pitch the feature set, you know, what solutions you are actually able to bring to bear. That became my, you know, my lens to the business world. The switch was interesting because on one hand, I was actually deeply involved in the product evolution. On the other hand, you know, in the sales cycle, if you know how the various pieces came together, you also know the story behind every feature set, why we did something in a certain way and not like everybody else did, where the innovation lies in the product and the value of that innovation. If you've been involved and you've been in the trenches to bring it together, then you are that much more effective in not just, you know, selling, but also representing the brand and, you know, bringing about the right expectation in the sales cycle. So that's been, you know, sort of the connection between being an engineer and then transitioning to being the spokesperson for the technology.
Right, right, for sure. It's because, yeah, you kind of have to know the product and then to, in order to really talk about the product, right? It's so important to kind of understand the ins and outs of it. I recently started a startup too. And so it's like, you have to be so involved in the product before you can really market it. So I can absolutely relate. So tell us a little bit more about the current organization that you're part of. Are you the founder or did you come on later on after the organization started?
Yeah, so I'm the co-founder, CEO of Onboard. Onboard is an organization that actually caters to the governance needs of organizations of all sizes. So we have about 5,000 customers globally, and we sell a governance platform, which essentially for most organizations, the need starts with going digital in the boardroom. So all the workflows and all the information dissemination that happens in the boardroom, we help inspire and enable boards to professionalize and also realize their vision for the future. So we partner with them to make sure that you have the right information and the information flow is actually optimal for consumption in the boardroom. And then all the workflows, not just the board book, the minutes, the conflict questionnaires, the, you know, all the different approvals, you know, all of those are part of the board platform. And we believe that leveraging the power of digital remains the most promising way to make every board reach their potential. There's obviously an information overload when it comes to board meetings, because a lot of information has to be processed and presented in a way that actually can be assimilated pretty quickly by the board members. And anything that you can do to really reduce that cognitive overload is always helpful. But while you're doing that, you know, you're certainly involved in making that information flow more efficient from collaboration that's required to pull together the right information to consumption and all of that. But you also have, since we're talking about governance and boards, this is a field where there's a lot of liability involved and there's a lot of compliance required. So whether you're a small privately held company or you're a nonprofit which has some compliance requirements, or you're a big university with lots of governance structures, board of trustees and, you know, underlying committee structures, or if you're a publicly listed company, all of these are examples of, you know, the same challenges just playing out at different scales. And we cater to all of them. We work with more than 1,000 banks and credit unions. We also work with about 600 universities. In fact, March Madness is on right now in the US. As you know, the basketball season is upon us. Out of the 64 teams playing in the men's bracket right now, 22 of them are customers, including Purdue. And, you know, so it actually kind of gives you a sense of, we are pretty entrenched, the board of trustees that all these 22 universities use our platform. Lots of big decisions that actually have far-reaching impact. We also work with more than 1,500 nonprofits, some of the most amazing nonprofits in the world, from Khan Academy to Malala Foundation, to, you know, on and on. I mean, from Oscars to, you know, there's lots of different, I should say the Academy, that's the name. These are some really amazing organizations to get to work with them. Lots of hospitals, about 600 hospitals and counting. That's one of the fastest growing segments we have. Lots of publicly listed companies. you know, quite a few of them actually are the ones that you use on a daily basis. So, you know, these are some of the organizations that we get to work with. And, you know, if you really get down to it, it's an application that started out as, can we make you more efficient? Can we make you more professional? Can we actually bring about the change that gets you scale ready? To now with AI, it's fast become the way to actually get you to a high, to be a high performing board and to bring about professional board experiences, you know, to your boardroom.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what we get to do.
Awesome. And what was the catalyst? Why specifically governance for boards?
Wonderful question. So we started out in employee portal solutions. So back when I was at Purdue, Yahoo and eBay, and I'm going to date myself, those were the big companies, the ones that everybody wanted to actually take a shot at. So we started out with a Yahoo-inspired portal software for the enterprise. And it was a SharePoint competitor called Ensemble. We sold that to financial services industry for many years. In 2008, when the financial crisis happened, we had 400 customers and every single one of them was a financial services customer. So when that crisis hit, we were still, you know, bootstrapped and we've been on the Inc. 500 list. We were a profitable company, but really found that all our customers were actually slamming the brakes. So we had to think about what else would we do? And we started to look at other verticals. And it took us a couple of years to tinker around to figure out, could we diversify into other verticals? And that certainly, you know, had some limited results. We went into healthcare after that because financial services are highly compliance-driven organizations, but so are hospitals, with some limited, you know, results. And eventually it led to this sort of, you know, epiphany where collaboration, which is what we did with our portal and sharing information and documents and workflows, applies even better in the boardroom. Some of our customers were quoted to see if they could pilot this for us. So from the intranet to the extranet, if you will. So we pivoted towards the board space and we found that the decision making was much faster. The workflow was more standardized because board meetings pretty much globally follow the same patterns. And while the number of users were less, but they would pay more for it.
Right.
And we actually found it to be much easier to go from one vertical to the other. And that led to, you know, a pretty clear sort of, you know, change of, you know, the business model itself. So we started targeting the governance needs of all our customers. The initial customer base, 400 customers that we had at that time, led us to a good handful of customers, you know, using it and really, you know, succeeding with it. And then along that same time frame, iPads were invented in April of 2010. And that's when everybody wanted an iPad and everybody wanted to be in the boardroom looking at information using an app. So we rode that wave and it really led to a lot more organizations from faraway industries actually wanting to, you know, digitize their board meetings. So that was the first big pivot in the organizational history. And the second big pivot came when COVID happened. You know, when COVID happened, every board meeting turned digital overnight and you were forced into it. And, you know, while people were using Zoom to look at each other and talk, you know, on a bridge, but at the same time, the information and the workflows and the compliance was even more important because you were not physically in a room, you couldn't distribute papers, so you really had to deliver digitally. And we really actually found ourselves, you know, in high demand. The first time around when iPads came around, we took some money from private equity firm 5Ms out of Kansas City. And second time around when COVID actually added another investor, GMI, and haven't looked back, you know, after those, you know, sort of corporate structural changes that we made.
Right. Yes, it's such a big change when COVID happened, right? Like you couldn't be in a board meeting in person. So everything had to be digitized. Everything had to be online. Everything had to be accessible via a link or via your email or whatever portal or a website or something like that. So yeah, I can absolutely understand that. On the marketing agency side, we've been remote since the beginning. And when COVID happened, we were like, oh, just another day of work for us. Like no change because everything was already set up. All communications and all, you know, processes were already all set up online. So it's interesting kind of how you have to pivot, especially with these boards, to make sure that everything is online. And since, you know, couldn't fly, couldn't do anything during COVID. And is this the platform that you currently have, is that also available for like recruiting board members, or is it just for like management of boards and board meetings and things like that?
I think for the moment, just for management of the board information, and I should say from minutes to resolutions to budgets, there are plenty of important work streams that are there. But a good way to think about this is any scaled up organization typically has 5-7 committees that are supporting the board work. These are subcommittees often with some independent board members and some, you know, experts that you pull in for audit, for, you know, comp committee, you know, finance committee and such. So, you know, there's a lot of early success that we had in the boardroom. And since we've gone deeper into the organization, now one big change that happened in the last couple of years, as you know, has been just the realization of the early fruit on AI side. Mm-hmm. And that's been a big tailwind for us simply because all the unstructured information, even in the boardroom, for the first time could be processed using technology, and you could make some, you know, insights appear from that. So unstructured to structured in a way where you could accurately say, hey, you know, what are the key risks that we are running into? What are some, you know, good questions for this, you know, go-to-market pivot that we are trying to make, you know, as we're trying to get into a new market? Suddenly you have, you know, the way I think about it is, you know, the combined wisdom of all published information on the web can actually be accessed. But what we do is responsible AI, which essentially allows your boards to tap into that wisdom without contributing to the large language models. You know, you could always go to ChatGPT and, you know, feed a document, but that wouldn't be right for any board document.
Right.
It's all privileged information, whether you're a nonprofit or a private board or a publicly listed company or a city council. You know, a lot of information is public, but in controlled formats. You know, for example, for a city council, the minutes are available and the board information is available, but there's a lot of other information that's accurately shared. And what's shared often outside is very curated.
Right.
So you don't want any inadvertent board member sharing that information with a large language model, because that then becomes available for anybody else to actually mine, and who knows where it may show up. So what we now are actually actively building are experiences that allow you to have a more intelligent board experience. So essentially think of it as a, you know, a cycle that we're going through, where we are first automating some assistant work. You know, think of a board meeting and somebody actually taking minutes. Well, you don't need to do a lot of that because AI can help you with that. Board members thinking through their experience would ask them questions, but they could always accurately prompt AI to accurately ask them, you know, what would be a good question to ask as we're thinking of going to Germany? Is this a good time to go to Germany? And, you know, having access to that information in a way that allows you to think more holistically improves the performance from the execs, also improves just the oversight and, you know, the strategy conversations that the board has. So we see a pretty organic, you know, use case for AI in the boardroom, and we're busy powering those experiences at this point. So yeah, that's sort of, you know, the full picture of where AI and governance, you know, intersect as we stand today.
Yeah, I mean, just even thinking about like, oh, what, you know, we talked about doing a go-to-market strategy for Germany 5 years ago. What happened there? And, you know, do we want to revisit it? And what were some of the issues, right? Because you talk about all these things and then you forget, you know, but then you can tap into AI and be like, well, we talked about it, but then we decided not to go into Germany because of XYZ. You know, do we need to revisit it? Do we need to, you know, pause on it? That's a much faster way of just, you know, historically looking at things, because, you know, we as humans forget so often what happened. So AI is here to help us remember. Yeah.
I think so. I think at the very first blush, we are seeing lots of usage on just the assistant, you know, aspect of AI that can assist in building the next meeting and give us a draft agenda based on, you know, Q2 meeting from last year. But then, you know, the next set of, you know, innovations are more related to, you know, essentially, you know, if you think about augmenting some of the board work, where you could start to think about what are some risks involved, what are the key highlights from the governance industry. So you could mine some industry knowledge, you could actually look through the unstructured documents that you have, and you can pull out some key aspects that may be worth actually sort of, you know, crystallizing. So there's a lot of augmentation of the board work. And eventually, I think, you know, it's going to actually lead you to be evolving meetings in a way that's going to actually be much more meaningful for the organization. We do feel like high performing boards will be tapping into AI in a very meaningful way in the next, you know, couple of years.
Yeah, and that's usually my last question is, you know, what do you envision? Where do you see the industry going over the next 5 to 10 years? You know, are we all going to be sitting in like, you know, boardrooms, holographic boardrooms with holograms? Is that how board meetings will be in 5 or 10 years?
I don't know. I feel like I should pull up the, you know, Vision Pro that I have sitting right here that we are experimenting with. And, you know, you could actually see your entire board book in a virtual, you know, infinite, you know, digital space already as we stand. The applications are compatible. I think if I peek into the future, I do see just the information set that the board gets to consider improve. And, you know, you'll see, so for example, a board member could actually say, hey, what is the gross margin trend over the last 8 quarters? And you'll have to actually kind of just, you know, ask for that request and maybe you'll get an answer, you know, soon enough. But now you could actually deploy technology to pull out those trends and, you know, present that picture right away in the moment. And I think that's of real value as discussions happen when they happen. What's not being considered, that's often a question. You know, what's not on the agenda can never be discussed in the boardroom. So what are we not thinking about? The competitive landscape, some of those pieces will be the major gains here. I do expect, you know, AI to be used by humans for the next foreseeable future, you know, call it, you know, 3-5 years. But certainly, we are already seeing some organizations consider appointing AI on their board. In fact, there is a very large, about $238 billion company out of the Middle East that recently appointed AI as a board member. Those are really outliers, but, you know, certainly you could extend from assist to augment to automate. The autonomous board meetings could be in the future, but that's actually far out future as I see it for the moment.
So basically you're saying that we're not going to need humans for board members. AI is going to be our board.
I think, you know, the way it will likely play out, and I'm not actually saying this tongue in cheek entirely, to be honest. I think often you need an expert on something for a short amount of time before you commit to that direction. And then you may need an independent board member who represents that skill set. AI is going to actually allow you to still tap into the wisdom of that crowd before you commit to that direction. So, you know, if a business is trying to go global, before you make that structural change at the board level, which often takes time, you can start using some of the benefits of what's already available. And I think that's going to have a material impact on just how boards perform. That's how it's likely going to be, you know, playing out, I guess.
Yeah, I love talking about these wild case scenarios for what the future holds for us. And I had no idea there's already an AI board member board in the world now. So that's crazy to think that. Well, thank you so much. This was such an insightful conversation. And I mean, I love talking about technology and how AI is helping boards. Last question is how can our audiences get in touch with you or your organization?
Absolutely. So, you know, happy to share, you know, that if you go to www.onboardmeetings.com, that's going to give you the most information, updated information. If you're in the public sector, so city councils and towns all over the world, they could go to www.escribemeetings.com. Those are two websites for two, you know, platforms that actually really power all these experiences. I'm available on Twitter at Perun. And if you want to get in touch with me on email, it's Perun@onboardmeetings.com. Those are the best ways to get in touch.
Thank you so much. This was great. I really appreciate your time and giving us more insight into how board meetings work and how technology is changing that. So thanks so much for being here.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Thank you for hosting and look forward to seeing how it all turns out.
Yeah, absolutely.